Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry and put that pools in your money and hold that money and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, what? Who cares? Marching, they never change anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama. If she could see me now. I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will.
The only two things in life that make it worth living is guitars tuned good and firm feeling women. I don't need my name in the marquee lights. I got my song and I got you with me tonight. Maybe it's time we got back to the basics of love. Let's go to Lukenbach, Texas, Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs, Lou Berry's train songs, and blue eyes crying in the rain. Out in Lukenbach, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain. So baby, let's sell your diamond ring, buy some boots and faded jeans and go away. This coat and tie is choking me, and in your high society you cry all day. We've been so busy keeping up with the Joneses, four car garage, and we're still building up. Maybe it's time we got back to the basics of love. Let's go to Lukenbach, Texas, Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs, Newberry's train songs, and blue eyes crying in the rain. Out in Lukenbach, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain. Let's go to Lukenbach, Texas, William Waylon and boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and the McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs, Jerry Jeff train songs, and blue eyes
Out in Lukenbach, Texas, there ain't nobody feeling no pain.
All right, it's time for another installment here of our podcast. Now, today is July 3rd, 2023. We have three birthdays around here. December the 24th, that is our birthday for the podcast, which we started out as It's My House Nuts. I got two titles, It's My House, as well as DIY Housing TV. So that's birthday, that's one birthday. The second birthday is my birthday, which is May 24th. And then today, July 3rd, okay, and we do 3rd and 4th, but officially July 3rd is the date that we bought our first 4 acres. We were going to look at 10. But we found 4 that wasn't even on the radar and bought the 4, so we still have it. And we have a name for it now, which is Earthwealth Forest. And within Earthwealth Forest, we have Earthwealth E-Village, which stands for Earthwealth Energy Village. Now, today we're on number 14 because we feature, every day, we feature a tiny town. Now, Lukenbach, Texas, for some of you who already know, or for those who don't know, that's a tiny town. It's only about 10 acres big in the state of Texas. It's a 10-acre big town, tiny town. And it's got a population of, I think, three regular people that live there on a regular, but they have an economy. They have an online presence where they generate revenue. You can rent out with Lukenbach, Texas, for picnics, weddings, or outdoor events. They have merchandise for sale. And every weekend, they have weekend entertainment events where they generate revenue. So that's Lukenbach, Texas. Now, today our title is Trading Post. And we're going to give, after we come back from this short little interlude, we'll give you the definition of Trading Post. Some of you already know what it is. But Lukenbach, Texas is also a trading post. So we'll get back to all that right after this.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer at the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right, today's podcast is titled Trading Posts, and then we're going to do a feature on Tiny Town number 14 for us, Tiny Town 14 for us, which is Chicken Alaska. That's the Tiny Town we want to highlight today. But now, before we get into what is a trading post and why is it significant? When, like I say, today, July 3rd, is the birthday for our four-acre piece of land here in North Florida. When I first got it, I had a general vision for it, but nothing specific. I didn't have a name for it. Matter of fact, I didn't even come up with a name for it until this year. So, or actually 2022. But so, and I looked up some definitions. So it was just a four-acre tract, but it's wooded. And so I call it Earth Wealth Forest, Earth Wealth Forest. Now, within Earth Wealth Forest, we'll have a village, and that's called Earth Wealth E-Village, which stands for Earth Wealth Energy Village, because there's so much natural energy there that you can tap and harness. We're talking about water. We're talking about sunlight, the generated electricity, biofuels. It's rich in biofuels where you can heat your home, cook your meals, take a hot shower, and all that kind of stuff. So, but I knew it was home. I just, I didn't have a name for it about 7 years ago. What I didn't know, and I just came into this group of knowledge this year, is that last Friday, I gave you there are five basic distinctions of a town or a village. And over the weekend, I discovered another one, which are trading posts. So let me do a review. They're municipal, and once again, in the United States, you have over 330 million people. 86% of that population lives on just 3% of the landmass. Now, here are the six things that we're dealing with, the distinctions that decide on where you might want to live or move to. They're municipal. They're communities that your municipalities, they have municipal charters, municipal corporate charters, and they can be anywhere from a population of one person to over 8 million people, like in New York City. But typically with municipal towns that have a municipal charter, typically, not in all cases, but typically, some of the municipal services offered would be a police department, okay, a fire department, water, municipal water. And you pay for those services through your taxes. They might have a library, a school system. All of those are municipal services. And 86% of the population, they like those things, and they're willing to pay for those things, and that's why they live in particularly a lot of these larger municipalities. Now, they're also – now, municipalities are typically more expensive to live in, not in all cases, but in most cases. All right. Now, the second type of township would be unincorporated, and unincorporated communities or towns or villages – they typically won't have a police force. They won't have garbage collections or recycling by the city. That's something that you have to do on your own as an individual homeowner or homesteader. You know, there's probably no public school, no state-sponsored education. That's something that you're going to have to put together with your other people that live in your unincorporated community. Then there's clothes. All right? These are communities that they do not want to deal with the general public. Right sandwich, right in corporate clothes would be private communities, private townships or villages. And this is like Tavistock, New Jersey. It started out as we had some people that were members of a country club, and they wanted to golf, get in there at 18 holes on a Sunday when they had time to do it. But in part of New Jersey where they were, legally they weren't allowed to do it. So what they did was they got together, they bought some land, and they started their own town, which is Tavistock, New Jersey, one word, T-A-V-I-S-T-O-C-K, one word, Tavistock, New Jersey. Tavistock has 9 registered voters that live in the town. There are 3 households in that town. The town is owned by a country club that has over 400-plus members. The membership, once again, this is a private club that owns this town. And everything I'm talking about, you as an individual can do the same thing. That's why we played the Jimi Hendrix rendition of the Star Spangled Banner today. Because what Jimi Hendrix did with the Star Spangled Banner and his version of it, he was innovative. So in this country, and July of 2023, you can still be innovative and create the type of living environment that you want to live, even if it means starting your own town, which they did in Tavistock, New Jersey, or Luckenbach, Texas, and God knows a gazillion others. All right, so, you have to have a $25,000 membership fee to get in. You have to pay, I forgot what the membership, but they have yearly dues too, which maybe $4,000 a year, something like that. But that's tiny town. And there are many of those around the country. The next one would be company towns. All right, Hershey, Pennsylvania is a company town built around making chocolate candy bars. And Milton Hershey, who founded the town, he wanted a place where his workers were there. They built houses there. They had stores there. So everything that his workers needed was right in Hershey, Pennsylvania. All right. And that's the company town. And you have many company towns around the globe. And then the last distinction, a trading post. Now, let me go read the definition of a trading post. And a trading post is a store, listen carefully, it is a store or small settlement in a village, a town, a city. They're all different types of settlements based on legality and population size. So a trading post is a store or small settlement established for trading, typically in a remote place. Now, the city of Chicago, which was settled by a Haitian, a black Haitian, do South, recognized as founder of modern day Chicago. All right. It was a trading post. He found a place that was abundant in game, you know, food to eat, plenty of water, and it was a pathway. The Native Americans were there first anyway, where, you know, you're going from A to Z, one territory to the next territory. You're close to Canada. It's, as you've heard me say on here many times, everything starts with one. Okay, not all Native Americans were there first, but when Europeans began. So the Sable, set up a trading post. All right, now, a town could be, some communities can be a combination of municipal and trading posts, an unincorporated trading post, or some people just don't want to, you know, it depends on what they're trading. With Tavistock, New Jersey, their thing is golf and anything related to golf via the private membership. They're really not open to the public because even to get in there, you have to have a recommendation of two members and good standing within the club for that. But anyway, the basic definition of a trading post is a store or small settlement except for trading, for trading typically in a remote area. Now, another definition I'm reading here as a description of a trading post, a store established in an unsettled or thinly settled region by a trader or trading company to obtain furs, now this is old school definition, furs and or local products in exchange for supplies, clothing, or goods, or for cash. So a trading post can be one remote store or a store, or can be an entire town. All right. Now, if you go online and you type in Amish community maps, or Amish towns maps, or Mennonite community maps, or Mennonite town maps, and there's a lot of them. One of them that comes off the top of my tongue, I mean here, is Yoder, Kansas, Y-O-D-E-R, Yoder, Kansas. Yoder has a population of 165 people. Yoder is full of Amish families, and those families are merchant families. The married couple involved and their children, they're merchants, they're entrepreneurs. They have family, they have a family business or businesses. Yoder, Kansas is a trading post, Amish trading post that takes up the entire town. If you want a barn built, they got somebody in Yoder that can do it. If you want solar panels put in your house, they got somebody in Yoder that can do it. If you want baked goods, they got shoe fireplies, hot cross buns or whatever. They got somebody, they got a family-based, Amish-based business that can do it. Yoder is a trading post. Now, if you look at some of these ghost towns out here, you know, that exist today, some of those were trading posts, but when businesses, somebody died or somebody didn't take over the business or that business wasn't as lucrative anymore, then people left, and that's how a lot of ghost towns became ghost towns. So the town that we're going to mention, that we're going to highlight today is Chicken, Texas. And there's some modern versions of, of trading posts. Amazon is a digital trading post. Right here in 2023, you can get it by your phone, internet connection, tablet, notebook, what have you. Amazon is a trading post. It's a digital trading post. Okay. You can order something in Chicken, Alaska, or Chicago, Illinois, or Dubai, or in Nigeria. Okay. Amazon, I don't know, through Amazon. Also, Facebook Marketplace is a trading post. It's a digital trading post. eBay is a digital trading post, okay? For those who don't have a, you know, We're going to Chicken, Alaska, and that's the highlight we have today for a tiny town. The population of Chicken, Alaska is 12 people. So let's see what's happening with Chicken today. And Chicken is a tiny, unincorporated village in southeast Fairbanks, in the southeast Fairbanks, Alaska census area. It is a community founded on gold mining and is one of the few surviving gold rush towns in Alaska. The population was 12 at the time of the 2020 census. That was up by 7 people in the 2010 census. However, usually year-round, there are a total of about 17 inhabitants of Chicken, Alaska, due to mining. So there's still gold mining in Chicken, Alaska. Chicken's population peaks during the summer. It has frequently been noted on the list of unusual place names. There is now, once again, Chicken, Alaska is the town that is also a trading post. Why? In Chicken, Alaska, there is a cafe. It has a gas station. It has a small hotel. And it has an RV park. It also has a small general store and a saloon, also known as a bar. And those are the trading posts within the trading posts known as Chicken, Alaska. And you can read about it online and see pictures of it and all that. Let's see, history. Chicken, Alaska was settled by gold miners in the late 19th century. In 1902, the local post office was established, requiring the community name, which required a community name. Due to the prevalence of Pecharmia, whatever that is in the area, what's that name? Okay, it's a medium-sized game bird in the grouse family. Okay, that's where that comes from. So. In the area, the name was suggested as the official name for the new community. However, the spelling could not be agreed on, so they came up with Chicken to avoid embarrassment. A portion of Chicken, Alaska, with buildings from the early 1900s and the F.E. Company Dredge Number 4, Pedro Dredge, was listed in the National Registry of historic places as Chicken Historic District. Chicken is the outpost for the 40-mile mining district. There are still active gold mines and inactive dredges in the area. Enough gold was mined here to make it worthwhile haul to huge gold dredges to this remote location. On September the 7th, 2021, Jack in the Box released ad campaign claiming to have purchased the town for 10,000 cluck chicken sandwiches as a commemorative hat. The company explains on the website created for the campaign that this was the only ad, but the company has donated $10,000 to help the town amid the pandemic. However, as of September 2021, the downtown area of Chicken, Alaska, not owned by Jack in the Box, was for sale, including the Chicken Creek Cafe and the Chicken Creek Saloon, a liquor store, and a gas station, the Chicken Mercantile Emporium, in a 1,400-square-foot residential cabin. Okay, let's see. It's got a lot of acreage. It's 115.4 square miles big, all of its land. Do I see the South Fork River, I guess, is connected to Chicken some kind of way. Chicken has an airport. Okay, Chicken has an airport, and you can get to Chicken. You're not driving to Chicken. Well, hold it. Now, there's two ways to get to Chicken. You can get there because Chicken does have the Chicken Airport, And it's also available, you can get there by road, by Alaska Route 5 and the Taylor Highway, which is not maintained from October to March. So it might be better to fly in the chicken. Okay. So here's a town that, you know, some miners up there prospecting for gold said, man, we need a place instead of going back and forth. You know what? And more than likely, a lot of these towns, their first bed of housing, even in places like Alaska, was a tent. All right. So, and then they went on from there. So, in places like Chicken, Alaska, is what I call the real United States of America. Because in these places, you don't need to have a highest credit score. You don't need to have a huge bank account or nothing like that to go to these places. And now, you got to have some skill set or be associated with people with skill sets, you know, but it's not difficult to learn how to pitch a tent. It's not rocket science to learn how to build a little small cabin for a house. Okay. So, in Chicken, Alaska, that's going down Tiny Town 14. And on our birthday, like I said, our birthday for Earth, Wealth, Forest, Earth, Wealth, Third, that's this day, well, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, maybe 9 years ago, I was to North Florida to look at 10 acres of land and then was introduced to the 4 acres of land. And I knew that I said, this is home. So, and I think we posted a video of that walkthrough on our Facebook page. All right, well, let's see. Today's a work day, I guess, for some people. Some people might be playing hooky. Tomorrow's supposed to be, or tomorrow is the 4th of July, which is a federal holiday. So some people might have this as an extended weekend, and they might have taken the day off and won't be back to work until Wednesday. So anyway, so that's my rant for today. If you guys have anything that you want to put out there, trending topics or whatever, announce. Oh, you know what, another thing? We're also going to have Airbnb for dogs. Maybe Airbnb for rabbits. Excuse me, Airbnb for pets. But Airbnb for dogs. So if you guys want to talk about that, because there's a lot of people who travel and they need a place for their pet to stay. It could. But now we're talking about dogs, but the reason why I thought about rabbits is for some people they might need a place to put their rabbit, you know, as they go on vacation. So dogs, rabbits, but dogs. That was recommended. So let's see. Let's go back to the phone lines here. And that's something, if you got a little space in your own home, just put for a dog. Okay. But anyway, Airbnb for dogs, and we're going to cover that today as well as tomorrow. As well, matter of fact, we'll probably do it all through the week on how to get that set up. So we'll touch on Airbnb for dogs, because that could be getting close to that idea. So. In any event, 619-768-2945, any comments on Airbnb for dogs or Airbnb for pets? That's something, that's a side hustle that can become a full-time revenue stream for you. And anything else that you guys want to put out there, while we're waiting for you to call in, we'll go back to Steve Harvey with 10 by 10.
Listen to me. Rich people think differently. So what I'm going to put in your head today is a rich people concept so you can get to understand it. The only difference between successful people and not is just how they think. Rich people think different. Quit letting people tell you got to get qualified in another program. You don't need another program to be successful. You need to change the way you think. So here's the deal. The problem with becoming a millionaire is that when you decide that you want to be a millionaire, you immediately start thinking, how can I become a millionaire? Well, that thought don't just pop into your head, so you get frustrated and you don't become a millionaire. And you start creating stuff like, well, I guess this wasn't the Lord's will, or as soon as I think of how I'm going to make a million. You can't think of how to make $1 million. Stop. Do you know if you knew how to make $1 million, what's the day, Tuesday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? But suppose I told you how you can become a millionaire with what you have. Because here's the deal. All of you have everything it takes to become rich. You just don't believe it. Now, if you can develop this theory that I'm about to share with you, I have the way for you to be rich. This is it. First of all of you have a gift. God gave it to you when he created you. God never created a single soul without giving them a gift. That's the God that created you. He's a very smart God. Hear the cold thing. When he made you, he put the gift inside of you. He didn't hide it under the ocean. It ain't on the mountain nowhere. It ain't under no rocks. You ain't got to go drilling. God put what you needed inside of you at birth. All of you have a gift. But you have got to do your gift, the thing God gave you at birth to do. It is the thing that you do the absolute best with the least amount of effort. That's your gift. Anything else you doing, you wasting your time. Do you hear me? You wasting your time. If when the alarm clock goes off in the morning and it makes you sick every morning that alarm go off, it's because you ain't doing your gift. You're going against what God created you to be. Do most of you know what your gift is? Who in here doesn't know their gift yet? Okay, let me tell you what you do. Go home today. Don't talk to nobody. Sit down and have one conversation with yourself. What is the thing that I do the absolute best with the least amount of effort? This ain't going to take you long. You old enough, you grown. Write it down. I don't care if it's networking. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's doing color. I don't care if it's painting. Whatever it is, it's what you do. Sing it. Whatever you do the best, write it down. That's your gift. That's it. You ain't got to go asking a bunch of people. They've been telling you your whole life. You know, you ever have people call you with their problems? They always call you with your problems because you gifted at it. But you didn't know how to identify it. If you identify your gift. Now, let me ask you this question. This thing that you're gifted at, if you did it for somebody, do you think somebody would pay you $10 for your gift? Just $10. Could you babysit for $10? Could you cut somebody's hair for $10? Could you cut their grass for $10? Could you make them a chicken dinner for $10? Could you do something for $10? Everybody, don't you have something somebody would give you $10 for? Okay, now, once you have something that somebody's willing to pay you $10 for, this is how this works. It's called the multiples of 10. See, you don't have to figure out how to be a millionaire. You just got to figure out the thing that makes you $10. So now here we go. You do it and you make $10. Soon as they pay you the 10, go do it 10 more times. Whatever it was. Watch some more kids. 10 more times. Get another 10. You got $100. When you get $100, whatever you did to make that $100, listen to me, do it 10 more times. You ain't got to get tricky with it. Just do it 10 more times. You'd have made $1,000. Whatever you did to make the $1,000, don't get smart. Stay stupid now. Do it 10 more times. You have now made $10,000. Hold up. Now we finna grow a little bit, but guess what you got to do to grow? You just got to do some more. Whatever you made $10,000 doing, I need you to do it 10 more times. What you tripping for? If you do it 10 more times, you got $100,000. Now, you might have to hire some people to make this happen. You got to figure that part out. But all you got to do is do what you did for $10. Once you make $100,000, uh-oh, if you just do it 10 more times.
Okay, that was Steve Harvey with 10 times 10. Okay, well, we are here on July 3rd. Tomorrow's the 4th, but like I said, we celebrate the 3rd and 4th. The 3rd is our Earth Wealth Forest, Earth Wealth Energy Village. That's the birthday for that, our four-acre tract of land. That's the name of it. And tomorrow is, of course, the nation's birthday, July 4th. So I sandwich those two in together. I was just sent a few minutes ago a video of there were two guys. One was trying to say that Dubai, and I guess it's a matter of hometown pride, he was trying to pump Dubai up over Nigeria. But then I had to send the guy who sent me the Instagram video on that. I said, "Now you have to look at this. Dubai is a city. It's a city of 3 million people. It's not a small city. It's a city of 3 million people, and you cannot compare a city of 3 million people to Nigeria, because Nigeria's got over 100 million people that live in the entire country. So that's fact number one. Number two is Nigeria has several large cities that, when it comes to revenue of those cities, are comparable or surpass what happens in Dubai. Abuja, Nigeria, and Lagos, Nigeria, are just two of those cities. They're more than just those two, but I just named those two. Lagos, Nigeria, has anywhere between 21 to 26 million people as compared to Dubai with 3 million people. So, you know, it's all subjective, but, I mean, which one you like or whatever. But when it comes to commerce, there's several cities in Nigeria, and not just Lagos and Abuja. That's just two. But there's several other cities in Nigeria that, that historically and even in right now and today, real time, they're world-class cities, particularly when it comes to commerce or vacation. So I'm going to suggest to that guy, you know what, book a ticket, get to the motherland, and see what's happening in Nigeria, Abuja, and other parts of Nigeria, man. It's Africa is no tar. It's not like the old movies of yesteryear. Okay. Nigeria, Abuja, and other cities around the continent are modern. They have multimillionaires, and they have billionaires. 410 area code, your mic is open.
Hotel, Brother L.A., how are you doing?
Fine, fine. How are you?
All righty. Over the last 10 years, Have you really paid attention to what has been happening to the black population in the United States?
That's a good question. I'm going to narrow it down to two metro areas that I've set foot in. One would be Washington, D.C., where I'm from and still have a connection to it, and Chicago. Now, with D.C., in the last 10 years, and this podcast launched from something that happened to me in Washington, D.C., D.C. has become gentrified. And in Chicago, I know at least 250,000 black folk that live in the city of Chicago. I don't know about all of Cook County, but in the city of Chicago, 250,000 black folks have moved to Chicago to outside of the city of Chicago, and in some cases completely out of the state of Illinois. So now, I'm going to attribute that to, not in its entirety, but one element is some of these people, black family members who the ancestral house, somebody made them an offer, and they left the offer, and they sold them. And that's why I say a lot of black people killed the goose that laid the golden egg, and when they sold it to somebody else, the demographics of that particular city, that's one of the things that happened in Washington, D.C., from my personal observation. In Chicago, I would probably say the same thing. But that's not the only thing. But that's my opinion of what has happened in the last 10 years.
Okay. Look, let's go step further. The Supreme Court struck down the affirmative action program, didn't it?
They did that last week, I believe.
Yeah, for college admissions. They have been chipping away at that for years. Now, pretty soon it's going to spread over into the private sector, where when you go for a job and you're working on a job, those affirmative action programs are going to be affected by this. Now, in 1965 and before 1965, it was very difficult for black folks to exercise their right to vote, wasn't it?
Yes.
For the last 10 years, they've been chipping away at trying to make it more difficult for black folks. Now, you may not agree with it because the thing is, you are a black conservative. And I can't read your mind, but based on things that I've been hearing from black conservatives, they were saying that that wasn't true. But if you look at the actions, they have always criticized the black movement to cast their vote. Now, rightly or wrongly, it doesn't matter who blacks vote for. I'm just talking about the effort to try and stymie blacks exercising their rights to vote. It stripped away the key part of the VRA, right? The Voters' Rights Act. What was it, Shelby versus Eric Holder? They have gone in and gerrymandered sections of the state to try and reduce black effort to go in and try and get representation. So now, those things are evident. It's not safe black folks to live in cities anymore. Whether you agree with that or not. I don't know whether you agree with that or not.
Well, hold on, repeat that again. Hold on, repeat that again, Beasley.
What, as far as black folks not, it's not being safe for black folks to live in cities or not?
To a certain degree, I will agree with you on that. Well, you know, I'm preaching go rural. You know, that's my battle call.
Well, whether you go rural or not, I'm just saying that wherever black folks are, there stands a chance that you might encounter an incident that's going to challenge your right to be. I don't care where you are. Whether you're riding down the highway and you just happen to, you know, look suspicious at what have you, which is just another form of the slave patrols as far as profiling is concerned. But the thing is, what I'm trying to tell you is this year, it seems like, and I know I'm going to get some blowback on this, that it's very difficult for black folks to exist, even in your own section of the city. You know, all the other parts of the city, those other ethnic groups can go in and take care of their business and do what the hell they want to. Now, they have some problems, but not like...
Hold that thought for a moment. We got somebody that's responding. 317, your mic is open. I mean, not 317, 314.
Well, first of all, I want to wish everybody a happy 4th of July. I hope we have opportunity to enjoy it and also remiss on your patriotism. And I was listening to Mr. B's remark on affirmative action. That was a good court decision. It never should have been any realm of providing the favoritism of one ethnic group over another. And surely, when it comes down to the measurement of your capability, you should not be given favoritism over others who are also having their capability measured. And give you an example. The way this affirmative action was used is totally wrong. When you take black students in this case, and see, this could not work in, this wouldn't work in when it comes to employment. Somebody made mention of that too. But when you take black students that's applying for admission at Harvard and they have to take an exam and you give them, in this case, the SAT, you give black students 310 points before they even sit down and take the test. You give the Hispanic 270 points before they sit down and take the test. You give the white student zero, and you deduct from the Asian 140 points. That means that in order to score a perfect score, the Asian student would have to score 1740 in a 1600 perfect score situation. That's totally wrong. It's ridiculous. And maybe that accounts for so many of those that's given those points that end up dropping out or taking 6 years to get out of a four-year program. What's your opinion on that, Ellie?
I'm all for the merit system. I'm not a fan of affirmative action. I'm looking at things, you know, get it based on merit. Simple as that. That's me.
Yeah, I agree with you. So you couldn't do no affirmative action that way in when it comes down to jobs being hired, especially in my industry, which is commercial construction. It wouldn't work. either you do or you don't. Either you are or you're not. And that's the way it should be. And it also puts stigma. It puts stigma on the ones that's given the most points, or anybody really, because when you're in a situation where you are, when you're dependent on someone to perform, and you see one of those two come up, then quite naturally you're going to have doubts in whether or not they are truly, truly capable. Like this judge, this Jackson, she went to Harvard. She capitalized on Harvard's program of giving black skin extra points before they even sit down and take the test. So is that not a reflection on her ability? At least she had enough sense to recuse herself because she benefited from that. She received something from that of value. So she could not rule on the case. But when Joe Biden said, I'm going to elect a black female, I'm not elect, but appoint a female, or should I say nominate a black female, that was totally wrong of him to do that. But thus, those on the left, they do things that way. And let your boy come in and make a comment on that. We'll be civil. Hello, LA, you there? LA.
I had muted my mic. Sorry about that. I'm gonna open his mic right now. And of course, anybody else wants to participate. Anybody who else wants to participate, 619-768-2945, press 1. 410, your mic is open.
And by the way, happy 4th of July, 410. This great nation of ours.
410, your mic is open.
Hello?
Maybe.
Hello, can you hear me? Hello.
We can hear you, yeah.
Yeah, happy 4th of July, 14.
The July to you and the rest of the listening audience. I'm very grateful to be in the best and the most powerful country in the world that my folks, my African ancestors have built and use their genius and their brawn to make sure that, hey, it's a country and a nation that all nations can envy. I agree with you. Happy 4th of July to you, too. Okay, where do you want me to start at?
And so I made a comment on the validity of affirmative action. Might have been just a little bit longer than it should be, but affirmative action in the construction industry was when you make sure you got notification out to all those that signed up to receive it, all those that's participating in the industry, let know a project that they can participate in. That was affirmative action. Well, you either got that information out by fax generally or even in the mail. You can mail it to of those who signed up for the information, and they could be of any ethnicity company box. That was a good program.
Let me real quick before Beasley, you start back in. Here's the reason why I'm not a fan of never have been a fan of affirmative action, which is really the basis of this whole podcast. My opinion of affirmative action is the government or some political group who has got the gained the political clout to get some legislation on the books to force their agenda down your throat. In my case of It's My House, a squatter used the system to cram her agenda down my throat for over 3 years. And I had to pay out a whole lot of money behind that. So when I look at affirmative action, that's how I see it as affirmative action. It's not based on merit. It's basically politically rooted in political motivation. And my definition of politics is the art and science of protecting your interests or looking out for your interests. It is forcing, using the government as a tool to forcing something down your throat. It can act as, because imagine if you're, let's say you're black, white, whatever, and somebody wants to work in your family business, and then you let's say you don't hire them, and then they go dig up something from a furtive action and try to cram it down your throat. No, I don't like that at all. But that's my rant on that. Beasley, you got the floor.
Okay, let me try and bring some common sense to this discussion, because it seems like a lot of common sense is lacking here. I sent you a text, Brother LA. You know what? They used the Asians as suckers, and they didn't even understand that they were being used. Now, look, both of you, or whether or not you have heard of the Legacy Program, haven't you?
Yes.
Yes, I have.
The way I know about it, all right. Go ahead. I'm listening.
Explain to the audience what a Legacy Program is for these schools.
All right. Here's the way I know it. All right. I'm related to sports, like Notre Dame football.
No, related to sports.
That's the only way I know it, Beasley. That's the only way I know it. On a broader view, I don't know. I can't break it down. So you're going to have, you or Pionk is going to have to break it down.
I can explain how I know it, but I don't want to take up any of your time if you permit me.
Go ahead.
If you permit me. Let me tell you what a legacy program is. A legacy program is when a previous member of a family, like a parent, has came through an institution. Well, the reason why come that they favor that arrangement is because, one, that family have benefited from the wealth that they got from that institution, and it has helped them to gain wealth, thus by allowing them to give back in endowments to that institution. Secondly, the possibility in which it is played out, because we can say that, well, when you have a college parent, the child is more likely to go to college and do well. And that's true, because that legacy in that parent can filter down into their child in direction, tutorship, and also other things that their child would need to know in order to navigate themselves rightfully in that institution. Do's and don'ts, rules and regulations, and how to be able to succeed, whereas you're not expending valuable capital that institution could probably apply to somebody else. So legacy programs are good, especially in the construction industry, because if your grandfather was in a particular trade, if your father was in a particular trade, well, more likely that son or grandson could get into that trade with no problem whatsoever, because that knowledge is passed down to them, which is very, very valuable.
You know what? That was a really skewed way of explaining the legacy program. Yes, some of it is because of contributions. A whole lot of it is because my great-great-grandfather attended this school, and it gives you rights and privileges without competition, without merit, to come in and attend that institution. Now, as far as construction and all of that stuff is concerned, and sports and all of that is concerned, throw that out the window. We're just talking about college admissions here. Now, the trick is this. It was said that 45% of admissions to these Ivy League schools comes under the legacy program. Whether these kids are qualified or not, since you're talking about merit, man, I'm going to give you one legacy student that we all know. George Bush was a legacy child. He attended Yale or ever which one of those law schools he did. And you can tell, hey, look, the man wasn't the brightest bulb in the dark room. And the thing is this, the courts didn't address that. And the other thing is, when we talk about affirmative action programs, we're going in and unjustly saying that every white student that goes to college is very well qualified because of merit. Now, there was a young white girl down there in Texas. She went and challenged the same. She brought the same challenge into the Supreme Court. And come to find out, there were thousands of students in that, thousands of students, multiple thousands of students in that Texas university. That hey, look, that's still below what she did. And the thing is, it wasn't addressed that they didn't qualify to go in under their school. But what they did was they just focused in on black students under the affirmative action program. And for us to say, and I'm going to repeat this, for us to say that all of the accomplishments in this country was based on merit, I think I can say you a drawbridge in the Mojave Desert. This society has, yes, it's been based on merit somewhat, but the majority of all of this stuff that we're talking about has been on a merit system, a white-only merit system. Now, look, I'm going to give you an affirmative action program that I'm aware of. In the federal government, when two qualified people apply for a job, and look, they're both qualified. One may have more qualifications than the other, and this is proven. If a black person come in there with a qualification that is just a little bit better than a white, it used to be that white fellow would get the job. Well, affirmative action said, look, if that's the case, then you're going to have to go in and you're going to have to justify why you brought this person in with less qualifications than the other person for the job. And what that did was that leveled the playing field. That showed that, hey, look, wait a minute. The only reason I'm hiring this guy is because, hey, we golf together ever what have you. That exposed the good old boy system. And what happened was, that's why the affirmative action program was in there. It's to go in and say, well, look, if you got equal qualifications and you pick this guy over this guy, you have to justify why you done that. And look, they had to justify why they picked the black guy over the white guy if they had equal qualifications. Now, this thing that the Republicans and the conservative Republicans come in and told is a lie, that it gave one person an unfair advantage over the other, that was a lie. It said, hey, look, if you have two qualified people, you got to explain to us why you pick one over the other. And before that,
it didn't
matter. Let me finish. Before that, okay, all a guy had to do was walk in, and he was a golfing buddy and every damn thing else. And whether a woman or a black guy or another ethnic group had better qualifications, they were disqualified because of their race. So now this thing about everybody in America has progressed because of their own merit, I think somebody needs to have some explaining to do here. Now, go ahead.
Well, you mentioned one thing. You mentioned Harvard. Harvard is a private school. Now, I don't know how much government influence Harvard have, whereas the application of discrimination rules, or should I say laws, would apply to them or not. They don't have none. The federal government has nothing to say about what Harvard does.
Exactly.
The federal government has nothing to say about what private businesses do either, unless they're working on a federal contract. Because I have done jobs where I can hire all Russians if I want to, and not one Japanese or not one Korean, or not one Jamaican, or not one Native Black American. I didn't have to hire none of them. And even in the programs that they have, like WBE, Women Business Enterprise, DVE, Disadvantaged Business Enterprise, which usually applies to federal projects, and you had MBE, Minority Business Enterprise, they were just goals. And if you didn't meet the goals, there's no punishment. No punishment whatsoever. So people, or should I say entity, were just doing them out of the kindness of their heart, if you wanted to say that. So, yes, it, the merit can be based on a varying amount of qualifications.
Yes,
as simple as that.
Did you really?
Well, yeah, I heard you say that. Let me finish. So merit is a good method. I think it is the best method to determine whether or not a person is hired or not. And I think it's the same thing with going into these educational situations. If you're a child, see, and I hate to pick on, but I have to make mention of blacks. When it comes down to them, and not all of them, but way too many, they just don't qualify for these higher institutions because of a simple reason. They weren't prepared. And the reason they're not prepared can be a whole host of reasons. Some of them I don't even agree with. I don't believe in no long lingering effects. I don't believe because a child grew up in a neighborhood where they heard gunshots every now and then. That's totally ridiculous. What about a child who grew up in a rural area that heard thunders all the time? Wouldn't that not be scary? So I think that it's ridiculous to, and you know, you look at Harvard, like I say, why would you give a student points before they even take the test? Well, my grandson enrolled in the LSU on orientation day. He had to take a math test, a higher order math, to see whether or not he was capable to carry the math requirements his first semester. And he scored in the 90 percentile, upper 90 percentile. Why is that? Because he was prepared. So why come others don't? Because they're not well prepared for whatever reason it is. I don't know why they're not, but that is usually a determining factor. And another point, go get a welding job, a job that requires you to weld. They're going to give you a test. If you don't pass the test, your specimen don't hold up to the testing procedures that's given it to see if it's viable. Well, you're not going to get the job. That's the way it should be.
Well, see, that's the hole in your argument right there. Think about it. You're saying that every white student that goes to these institutions is well qualified, whereas some blacks aren't. And see, that's where you get in trouble at. Now, I can't say that 95% of all of those whites that go to those institutions are well qualified, and 95% of all of the blacks that go to those schools are not qualified because of where they come from. Environment does have something to do with it. Don't get it twisted here. But what the argument is, and where a lot of black folk and white folk that's against affirmative action get in trouble is, they're saying that every white student that goes to these colleges gets in their own merit. And that's a lie. You can't prove that. If that was the case, hell, I mean, all of them would graduate that goes into those institutions. And my thing is this year, how many of those black students that go in under that affirmative action program graduate? And what is the percentile of whites that go into these institutions don't graduate? And nobody has really dug down in the weeds to get.
I can tell you. See, in LA, I'm going to ask you this question. Whenever you hear discussions based on academic prowess, who do they always compare the black child with? The native black, not Nigerian. No.
Look, we're talking about black and white here.
Hang on for a second. We talking about blacks. I say, who do they compare Who do they talk about the gap between black and who else? They talk about the gap between black and white.
Is it Asian? I could be wrong, but Asian.
They never mention Asian. They don't mention Asians because Asians fall behind Nigerians in many cases of time. They talk about the black-white test score gap, which does exist. And I'm going to give you an example. When you look at what they like to prance out there, which is fine, they talk about historical black colleges and universities. Okay? When you look at the data going back as far as it's provided, especially in the last 10 years or so, the graduation rate for black colleges, you only have five at any given point in time that has a graduation rate above 50%, not in 4 years, which is a normal term for enrollment in a college to complete a degree, but in 6 years. Well, hell, 6 years automatically puts you back 2 years in tuition, which you would have paid the 4 years off if it was a student loan. Now you got 6 years worth of loan out there. And now they want the government to pay for your entire loan. That there is wrong. Something's wrong with the picture. Why does it take these kids? And we're not saying that the kids are inept, inferior. I'm saying that they weren't prepared. Then you have to look at whose job is it to prepare them. It ain't white folks' job to prepare your child for the challenges that they're going to perceive in life. It's not white folks. It's not Ghanaians, Nigerians, Jamaicans, Argentinians, Brazilians, Russians, Bosnians. It's not that. It's your job, the parent and the family. And that apparently is not being done when you only have five schools. At the top of the school list is Spelman. And I think that's there is not Spelman. What's that school down there in Louisiana? I can't think of it. It's a nursing school.
It's named after
Rockefeller's wife. But
my
that
name Dillard is in New Orleans.
Maybe it's Dillard.
He's talking about Spelman.
Okay, it's Spelman. Spelman's
in Georgia.
Thank you, Mr. Beasley.
Okay. Yeah, that's in Georgia.
Thank you, Mr. Beasley. So you got Morehouse, you got Spelman, and you got three others that I can't name right now. Maybe Howard is in there, too. But that's out of what, about 110 schools, they dropped 15, and they're going to drop some more because people are not going to them. But out of 110, you only got five with a graduation rate above 50%. Something's wrong with that picture. Now, I ain't saying that other ethnic groups, but right now we're talking about black students. Because you got the same poor performance that goes on with white students, too. They not exempt from it, but that's where the problem lies.
Well, see, I'm going to bring it right back to where we started at. You guys said that every white student that gets into these colleges gets in on merit. All that other stuff you're talking gets away from the crux of the conversation. And I'm telling you, and I'm telling L.A., that's not true. And the deal is this. If that's the case, everybody gets in the same way. But you know in this society, that hasn't been the case. Now, look, I'm gonna get on this. I don't know what the graduation rate is for these white schools. But the thing is, they have a high dropout rate, too. In fact, they said, and I read this article, and if I need to, I'll pull it up. It said that those white students that was going into these Ivy League schools wasn't reading on a college level. Now, we're saying they're prepared. And look, I'm with you. Hey, you know what? It's up to the parents to make sure that their children is prepared to do the work. There's no excuse for a child not being prepared to do the work starting from his start all the way up to as high as they can go. And that's one of the things that pisses me off, because we black folks have gotten into this thing where we don't give a damn about whether the child is prepared or not. But for those children that are prepared, what I'm saying to you is, and I'm saying to L.A., is that, hey, they're as prepared as the other people and with less resources. Now, this thing about all of this other stuff you're talking, now you can take that and flush it down the toilet. But I'm just telling you now that this system has never been predicated on a person's merit. And my thing is this here, if those black students that was in Harvard and these Ivy League schools weren't graduating, I'm quite sure it would be brought out and it would be a point of discussion amongst conservatives and white folk. But you never see that. And my thing is, that's the study that needs to be had. How many of these kids going in under the affirmative action program have flunked out? And compared to the white students that's supposed to be with all merit, have flunked out. Because look, it's hard doing that kind of work. And the thing is, hey, look, the people that start out as freshmen in these colleges, a whole lot of them don't end up with that piece of paper. That's all I'm saying.
Beasley, now, when it comes to HBCUs, when it comes to HBCUs, that they have legacy programs, too. I have two friends of mine. I went to high school with one of them. The other one's his sister. They got into Howard Law School based on legacy. And okay. Now their law firm brings in like 6 to 7 figures a month, and they're black. And like I say, you have HBCUs with legacy programs.
You're making my point for me, and I'm glad you brought that up. Now, has Howard refused, along with all of the other HBCUs, refused to not admit?
That question.
Well, wait a minute.
Because there's a white person,
like,
I don't know if the case is still going. There's a white person last year, I don't know where the case is now, there was a white student that was in law school, and he's suing Howard University because he got expelled from Howard University's law school.
Why did he get expelled?
I don't know the background on it. I'm going to have to look it up. I'll look it up this week and put it out on air.
Yeah, because it has to be centered on this conversation we're having. Now, I don't know why he got expelled, but it has to be, as far as admission is concerned. Now, he wasn't denied admission, but I'm saying the only reason these affirmative action programs have been put in place was because of discrimination. That's where this all started at. Now, the thing is, you can bash and turn all you want to, but the thing is this. It was a refusal to bring these kids in that was qualified to enter that university.
But
that's
not necessary. You don't know why they wouldn't come. It's not necessary that they were qualified. But here's the point. You shouldn't let people in because of the color of their skin. And when they should get in based on merit. My grandson got into LSU because of merit.
Thank you.
None of his tests does it ask the color of his skin.
We're talking about merit here. Do you know what? Look, your son was prepared. Now, the thing is, you don't know how many white students that weren't prepared.
Yeah, but why are you worrying about white students?
I ain't worrying about it. I'm talking about the affirmative action program and the justification for it. That's where this program started.
L.A., don't they complain that white women took advantage of more so of affirmative action than anybody else?
No doubt about it. They qualify as double minority. They qualify as women, and they qualify as, man, they got that's all in the tax code with them.
That's right.
Women probably took advantage of that more than anybody else.
White women are scoring better. The white women are scoring better on math tests than white males. And you know white males outscore black males.
That's right. And look, they benefited from this affirmative action program, like you said, because
they have benefited from it, Beasley? Because no, your government cannot have a program specifically for any group. The Constitution is about individual rights, not group rights.
That's right. And the thing is this, white women was being discriminated against in these institutions too. And the thing is this, black folks have always pushed the envelope in this country. Black folks have always pushed this country to be fair. And they have been the ones that least benefit from the efforts that they pushed this country to in order to make sure it was equal playing ground for everybody.
But all ethnic groups have pushed the country to be fair.
Prove it.
There's stories on all. You know, you had blacks that were in colleges, Columbia and others, back in the 1920s, a whole bunch of them. You had black-skinned students in the colleges in Frankfurt and Hamburg, Germany, in the latter part of the 1800s. Not no one, two, 10, 12, a whole bunch of them.
Yeah. Armand Delaney, W.B. Du Bois, all of them entered Harvard University. I get that. But in the later years, that's when all of this stuff come up about, hey, look, this segregation and all of this good stuff. But all I'm telling you is this. If black folks had to push this thing, then, hey, look, you would have had a problem.
That's the case, Beasley. Why is black folks against it? So you see, the way you describe things, you are tricking people. You can't say black folks as in all, because there's a lot of blacks that say, there's a lot of blacks that's against affirmative action. You've heard them speak out against it.
Of course, you always have the naysayers in our race. And they're the very ones that benefit from it. Yes, you're right. They're talking against Martin Luther King. But the thing is, when things open up, they was the first to come in and enjoy all of the accomplishments that he made. You're right.
My accomplishments in business was because of merit, not because of the color of my skin.
Okay. So when you put in for contract, you're saying that all of that was done on your achievement alone. Black, the civil rights laws and all of this stuff had nothing to do with it. Are you saying that?
Let me explain. Civil rights apply to all people.
Listen,
civil rights apply to all. Civil rights.
Are you saying them people that got their heads beat in and every damn thing is
you and I get in trouble because you try to talk over each other?
You being a successful contract.
All right, now let me answer that question. You asked the question, you tried to answer for me 3-4 times. Let me answer the question for you. Affirmative action don't apply when it comes down to contracts. I told you how it applies. You know what the deciding factor is? Actually, it's two, but the biggest one is cost. If you put in the lowest bid, you're going to get looked at. Then you know what the next thing they're going to look at? They're going to look at how you qualified the bid to make sure that you got everything included. If you got everything included and you got the lowest number, it don't matter who the hell you are, the color of your skin, you're going to get the job. What contractor, what architect that's representing the owner is going to say, well, we got to go with this price even though it's higher because it's a black person who's owned the company? They don't do it like that. It's foolish to do it like that.
Brother L.A., I asked him a question. He didn't answer it. I said,
L.A.,
listen, hold on.
Ask the question again.
Do you think that, hey, civil rights didn't, the march on civil rights and accommodations didn't have anything to do with you being a successful black person. I didn't say anything now, about a person.
Right, let me get my opinion on that. As in relationship to Pianki's business, and I've seen some pictures of his work, his business, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Pianki, is very precise. He couldn't
exactly.
have, I mean, if his buildings were built wrong or engineered wrong and somebody collapsed and died, his reputation, he would have to be probably, his skill level, in my opinion, had to be higher than any other contractors to get those contracts.
Why is that?
So I believe his profession, his job was based on merit. They had to be based on merit.
My contract was
dealing with the public.
My contract was, and I've done more private work than I did public work. My contract was awarded on price and qualification. Other words, I wasn't awarded a contract if my price was higher than the competitors. It don't make no damn sense. And with me, with a person who who came with the merit. See, when you come with the merit, you know what the specifications and what the qualifications for that job is. A person who don't have the merit, don't have the experience, don't have the track record, then you have to be careful with them. And you have to carefully look at their wording. Because they may use omissions in their price. Well, you cannot give a person a contract to do the complete job, and he's only including 50% of the procedures that's needed. Now, what you going to do with the lacking of the other 50%, especially if his price is so high that those who include 100% of the procedures, their price is lower than his. I know that's kind of hard to understand, but that's the way it works.
I'm muted, so I can't say nothing.
Thank you.
No, your mic is open. I don't mute nobody's mic.
Oh, look. What he's saying is true as far as contracts is concerned. I asked him a simple question. He said that everything was done on his merit, and that's true. And look, my family's been in construction, too. I asked him, does he think what he did was on his own merit, in which that is true. But in order for him to get there, the civil rights movement was responsible for him having a chance to put in and compete with these jobs on the merit. It used to be a time that...
All right, let me answer that. Don't go into a story, Tim. Let me answer that. My answer is yes.
You don't let me finish. Now, the thing is
no, you, wait a minute, hang on. You can't finish if I can answer that one part, because you bring it in by eight more parts.
Well, go ahead, man.
Now, on the part that you said yes, because civil rights did just not apply to blacks. It applied to everybody, even my competitors. Go ahead.
No, it did not. Now, I don't know who your competitors were, but whites always had the privilege.
Let me tell you why it did. In L.A., I want you to be as an outside listener. It applied because some of my competitors were female, black and white females.
We can go along with that, not against white males.
White males bid in it also.
Beasley, hold on. This might clear some things up. Beasley, what's your definition of civil rights? Because the definition of civil rights I go by, too, and this one I bring up, some of the slaves that started their own business, they had, as a slave, they had a civil right to start a business. All right, so what's your definition of civil rights?
Slaves didn't have civil rights. Now, look. We're talking about in the 60s, the 50s in the 60s, when all of this stuff was popping off, they didn't allow certain blacks in trades. and they didn't have accommodation.
What do you mean by certain black? Hang on for a second. What do you mean by certain black?
Okay. Go ahead.
No, what do you mean? I'm just asking a question. On basically what you stated, L.A., he said they didn't allow certain blacks. Now, I want to know what do he mean by certain blacks?
That's a good question, too. Yeah, what were certain blacks?
Look, blacks didn't have any rights in this country in the 40s and 50s and 60s. Now, you know that, and I know that. Well, y'all don't know that. But the thing is, we were second-class citizens, and there were certain things that they didn't allow blacks to do. In fact, Warren jammed up L.A. last week when he asked him a question. Now, L.A. danced around it, but the thing is, there were certain things they didn't allow blacks to do. You couldn't compete against a white person on a level playing field before these civil rights laws and everything and thing else were put in place. And that included white women, too. Now, for us to deny that, what we're doing is we're trying to rewrite history, but that's just a fact.
Let me address that point.
You still got to answer the question. Now, what's the definition of certain blacks? I still want to hear that definition.
The black population. Think about it. Now, you wouldn't have been able to attend West Texas State and play basketball if the civil rights movement hadn't come along. Come on. They would have ran your ass out of Texas. So now,
why did Jackie Robinson go into the major leagues? In 1947, I believe it was.
Okay. And he caught hell, didn't he? But now he was just one amongst many.
It don't make no difference if he caught hell or not. The thing is that the initiative was there to bring him here because it was a good economic issue. Move.
When I give
a competitive bid, low price, that's an economic. That's what it's all about. That's capitalism.
The civil rights movement gave you a chance to compete on a level playing field.
The civil rights movement gave my competitors a chance to compete, too.
They were already competing with women.
Let me ask you a question.
He asked about white males. It gave white males, a white contractor who was a male, the right to compete also. Because you had a lot of Italians. You had a lot of Russians. I ain't gonna say a lot of them, but you had Russian companies too.
Beasley, Booker T. Washington? We're going back to the Booker T. versus W.E.B. Du Bois argument. Booker T. Washington said, "Put the money first." I'm paraphrasing here. And Claude Anderson, who I start this podcast off virtually every morning, what does he talk about? Get the money together first. He didn't talk about color. He didn't talk about civil rights. He said, get the money together first, and then everything else will fall into place. I'm paraphrasing when I say that.
Well, you know what? We strayed away from the original conversation, and you're right. You know what? I heard this conversation years ago. Sister Shahrazad Ali and Al Sharpton was in a conversation, and he was talking about being discriminated against. And Shahrazad Ali said something that has lasted with me to this day. He said, Brother Al, when you have your own, you can't be discriminated against. And that's true. But now when you're out here in the broader area of commerce and you're competing, you can't tell me that bias doesn't have a play in this thing. It doesn't today because what happened is our people took the blows on the head to make sure that they'd be a level playing field. And that's my thing. But now the thing is to say that, hey, look, there weren't discrimination in these trades and every damn thing else, and to say that, hey, look, you know what, things was like it was today, was like it was back in the 40s and 50s. I think somebody has swallowed the Kool-Aid with cyanide.
All right, let me answer that real quick. Let me answer that real quick, because you like to give a narrative. And yes, there was bias amongst white contractors, white businesses, too. I'm going to tell you how the bias exists amongst in commercial construction. It's because the architect, the general contractor, can only take bids from union member contractors, which includes blacks. If you are non-union, you do not come on that project. So if that's not explicit bias, I don't know what it is. Yes, it's bias. But anyway, I'm going to get off of here, L.A. I don't want to make you go into overtime.
Isn't the nature of life there's some type of – I mean, we have private clubs. I mean, Baptists don't want to go to a Catholic church. Catholics don't want to be with the – don't people have a right to be in their own tribe?
Well, you know what, Brother L.A., you're right. You're absolutely – and look, I'm a proponent of that because I believe in the laws of nature. You know, I'm for segregation. I've always been for segregation. I believe in having your own. You know what? I respect racism. But the thing is, and look, I told a white guy one time, and we had the same conversation. And he was talking about affirmative action. And I'm going to tell you what I told him. I said, look, you know what? As far as private companies are concerned and private businesses, they shouldn't have to be forced to go in and serve people, especially black people.
Let me ask you a question.
Talking about race. Wait, let me finish. I said, you know what? They shouldn't be forced to under civil rights laws to serve certain people. And I say, but now when I pay taxes to the state, local, and federal government, affirmative action should be in there because my tax dollars are supporting the operations of those institutions. Now, I'm like you. As far as I'm concerned, I don't think blacks need to be fussing about going to Harvard. I don't think they need to be fussing about going to the University of North Carolina because we need to get off our behinds and we need to put up universities in every state where black folks have a population. So now you're talking
all right,
to
let
somebody.
Me ask you a question.
You're talking to somebody that, look, I don't give a darn whether I'm intermingled with white folks or not. But the thing is, for those that do and I pay taxes and something, yeah, I have an equal right to be treated fairly. That's my point.
Let me ask you a question, L.A. Do blacks have a right not to want to go to a black college? Do blacks have a right not to want to deal with other blacks? Or certain blacks, should I say? Yeah. So, see, what he just said is acting like it's a one-way street. He's trying to create a separate black everything or something. But blacks have just as much right because I would not deal with certain black fabricators because I know their stuff is going to be sloppy and it's based on past experience. And the back charges would just be insurmountable because they couldn't help. So I didn't deal with every black business that came along and still won't do that. That's the right that black businesses or black persons have. They don't have to go into no black store to shop if they don't want to. So why do they try to make it? Why do these guys people out there putting that out as a carved in stone of Moses saying this?
Well,
and
you know what? You
2023.
But my thing is this year. Whenever I need something, I should be able to go into, like Brother Elliott said, the tribe, because, see, everybody else operates on these principles. Yeah, if you don't want to, that's your personal preference. But the thing is this. Now, if you don't want to trade with certain black people and you don't want to be mingled up with black people, that's your choice. And we appreciate that, and we want you to stay away from us. But for the ones that wants to go in and have their own and to do what Brother Elliott's been preaching, go out there and have your own village. Yeah, you stay away from that, because the thing is, we don't want you. If you want to be
let
something,
let me address that.
Don't you?
Let me address that, because he's running out of time. See, you did it again. You said everybody else does. That is just not true. You can't say everybody else does. It's not true, because within everybody else, they have the same preferences, association and disassociation, just like I mentioned. Ellie, I'm going to get off here because it's getting late, and I don't want you to have to go into overtime. Is that okay with you, sir?
Okay. Well, no problem. Well, here in 2023, we got two black national holidays. We got Juneteenth. We got, what else we got? Martin Luther King, MLK Day. So we got two black national holidays. We got a whole month of February for history. We've got a black VP. We had a black man elected president of the United States twice. We got a black press secretary. She comes in my news feed at least two or three times, at least twice. So then as far as major cities, the mayors of New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Houston, and Atlanta, all black mayors. So I would say overall it looks pretty good for blacks, I think. But that's just my opinion.
Well, you know what? I just stated the point. Just like Booker T. Washington said, that's just like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, Farrakhan and all the rest of them. I believe in doing for self. I believe in being self-reliant. And the thing is, we need to depend on anybody to do what we need to be done. Now, as far as these colleges, and I'm going to go back to where we started. As far as blacks wants to get into these institutions and they're crying about it, my thing is we should build our own institutions, because we're unique people with a unique history. And the other thing is we need to prepare our offspring to compete out here in the world. Now, that doesn't mean that, hey, look, I have to be trained by a white person to do that. But I'm saying based on our history, this has always been a separatist country, just like South Africa. And for us to go in and try and blend in with everybody else, that has been our downfall. That's where I'm coming from.
I agree with you 100% on that, because that, going back to Elijah Muhammad, all right, he – or his wife at the time, Claire Muhammad, they started their own school system, which they still have. It was originally called Claire Muhammad Schools. Now I think it's University of Islam. But I'm a big proponent of that. Educate, because, like, you take Washington, D.C., okay, and other cities like that that have been gentrified. There's certain things that basically need to be taught on a home level or even an institutional level. The black church has they have the bodies and but the mindset's not there though. But maybe we'll talk about that tomorrow. But yeah, we do need our own schools that go into to address a lot of these issues and to pick up skill sets.
Exactly. But here's what I want to tell your boy over there. Look, when I say separate and I say segregate, it doesn't mean you don't compete out there with other people. I'm saying that for the tribal part, yeah, you might not want to deal with blacks. That's your prerogative. But as far as being a group needs to make sure that they have all of those things they need for the group to survive. Now, if you want to be an individual, hey, more power to you. But we aren't going to survive by being a bunch of individuals out here. That's all I'm saying. And I'm through.
That's true. Matter of fact, let me tie this back into the title of today's podcast, Trading Post. Now, like when you and your wife had that storm in Baltimore, that is a de facto trading post. I think there should be a curriculum within black families and or churches, faith-based organizations, their children how to have a family-based business that and the people that you hire first put that legacy in there should be the first people that you consider to hire and train to keep that business going from generation to generation. Matter of fact, we'll probably touch on that aspect of tomorrow. But as you said, but here's the thing, Beasley. The typical, well, I don't even know a percentage on it. There's a whole lot of, you can say even white, but you have a lot of black families. You know what? They don't want to be entrepreneurs. They just want to get that good old government job. And I'm not saying nothing's wrong with that, but all they want is that good old government job and get paid every 2 weeks. And they're not interested in building up a family-based business, be it a store, a barbershop, or whatever.
Look, I know you got to go.
They're the ones fighting, in my opinion, for that state-sponsored, affirmative action. That's just my opinion.
And they should. Look, whenever my tax dollars goes into supporting this federal government, and they are bureaucratic institutions that does the hiring.
Right.
I should have equal access to being employed in those institutions. Now, as far as dealing with Apple
how we determine what merit is, I guess that depends on the institution and the job we're talking about. Are we going to base it on grades? Are we going to base it on experience? You know, are we going to base it on networks? What?
But as far as you getting into a government job ever, what have you? Oh, you talking about a government job?
How are we all like? Now, you worked for the federal government before, right?
That's correct.
All right. Now, I'm assuming you got hired on merit, but what were the criteria they used for merit? I mean, grades, experience, what?
When I first applied for a federal government job, you had to take a test.
All right.
Okay. So now.
Well, that's called the civil service exam. Was it the civil service exam? Okay.
That's right. So now look.
That's one of the metrics for merit then.
That's right. But now look. A whole lot of blacks scored high on those tests, and they were rejected based on color. See, that's where this affirmative action thing comes in at. There used to be a thing that when you put in your application here, they put a black dot up in the upper right-hand corner of your application in your test paper. That black dot said that you was a nigger. So now what happened is if you were competing against a white guy in the same field, you didn't get that job. So now that's something that you guys haven't lived through. And the only thing that broke that thing up was affirmative action. They had to go in
okay.
and give an explanation.
All right. So now when you take that test, race is not on the application nowhere. Am I correct?
That's
I don't
right.
know. I'm asking.
That's right. All but right. now if you have some slick administrator up there and they decide amongst themselves to put a little mark up there to let them know who you are. See, the thing is, affirmative action says, hey, look, tell me why you picked this guy over here over this guy. And they have to justify picking somebody less qualified over a guy that's qualified. That's where affirmative action leveled the playing field. Because even when you have rules and regulations, there's always some crooked joker that tries to get around. And that's why I was for affirmative action.
Well, now, you're right about that. Now, I know when my mother was living, she told me, because she worked at Freedman's Hospital for quite a number of years, which was now Howard University Hospital, owned by Howard University. She said they never, at least in the medical part of it, they never fired anybody. People might quit, but they never fired anybody because they believed, that at least the rumor had it was, they didn't want to get into long, drawn-out, costly case or whatever it might be or whatever, but
well, I've people.
Well, you know what? Once again, the definition of my definition of politics is the art and science of protecting your own rights, or your own interests. So when the Civil Rights Bill was passed, that was the result of many black folk and others, but many black folk that got together to mold the system to befit their interests and protect their interests. Now, Joseph Kennedy said, eventually, everybody does business with everybody. So politics change because people, you know, people's, you know, their interests 150 years ago are different than today than what they were back then. So, because like I say, now you've had a black president, you got a black VP, you got a black press secretary, and the five largest populated cities in the United States are headed up by black mayors.
Well, look, I'm going to let you get off the air. I'm going to let you get off the air because you're in overtime. But let me tell you this. And, like, that's why we need our own schools. When black folks started marching, they weren't marching to integrate into this society. It was a segregated society.
Right.
It was white folks that pushed the integration thing because what happened is, and I sent you the list, and every town or every city in every state, they had a black business district. The integration thing came up to get into the black markets. That's what that was for. Black folks never said they wanted to integrate into the system. We were doing fine being segregated. And the thing is, they say, hey, wait a minute. These niggas taking this money and working for us, but the money ain't coming back over on our side. That's what this whole thing was about. See, we can have a conversation on this. But the thing is, we never
that's a good conversation because, right, you had blacks who got rich during segregation. And a lot of the blacks that during, you know, Jim Crow and all that, a lot of them that were lynched were prominent and wealthy blacks. However, we'll get in this tomorrow because we want to spend our money with anybody.
Well, that wasn't the case back in that day. Black folks kept their money in their community, except certain things. But all I'm telling you is, they never tell you about the Baton Rouge bus boycott, and you brought it up in one of the first programs that I heard about. They had to force the black bus companies out of business in order for the city bus line to come in. And put in and you laid it out very well. And the thing is, blacks said, hey, look, we ain't going. And the thing is, what made that successful was the white bus company was going out of business, so they had to come to the bargaining table. But the thing is, Jameson sold them out and said, hey, look, we can go back. When the blacks said, no, we're doing all right the way we are. We don't need to go back and ride their damn buses. But see, black folks can't think
they really didn't need to.
As the civil rights thing is concerned.
Right. Too bad they didn't buy that bus line.
Yeah,
well, anyway, it's 12:45. All right, everybody, have a good rest of the day.